So I first came to Taiwan in 1996 when Taiwan was preparing for its first democratic presidential elections, and China was shooting missiles its direction. And I got to land on the aircraft carrier, the Independence, which was plying the strait to try to keep peace. So these days, Taiwan is still having democratic elections, and China is still shooting things Taiwan's direction. But now it's not missiles, it's misinformation and disinformation. And that's my game. I'll just interrupt myself. The interface is based on Tinder, so it tests whether you swipe right if you think it's real, and left if you think it's not real. So I was developing it, my husband looked at my phone and was like, why do you have Tinder on your phone? Okay, so back to disinformation. So what we call fake news now, it's been around for a long time. It just used to be known as something else. It's been used to start wars, remember the Maine? To erase people from history? To add people from history? Anyone in the Taiwan crowd recognize these people? Anyway, former directors of the AIT were photoshopped out, and a controversial author was photoshopped in. Inside joke. So we talk about misinformation and disinformation. And the difference is misinformation is sort of mistakenly spreading news that's not true, or information that's not true. And disinformation is deliberately deceiving or distorting information. And so this is what we see in our presidential elections, or in the French elections, in the German elections, trying to manipulate voter behavior. So this is an example done by the Russians, targeting people on Facebook who are likely to vote for Hillary. And it says, don't bother to vote, just text your vote in. Which, we don't know how many people believed it, but it was fake. And hoaxers, the people who create misinformation, disinformation, are very clever. They'd be great marketers because they get everybody to do their work for them. They want you to share it, and they know how to target you to make you want to share it. In fact, before our presidential election, more people shared false news on Facebook than real news. And that's when we realized we really had a problem. Because they know how to target your biases. You know, it's not really our fault that we believe this stuff. It's the way our brains are wired. And there's all sorts of biases and what we'll go through. But so today I want to talk first about why is disinformation so effective? And why has it been so effective in Taiwan in particular? Why is it such a problem there? And what can we do to detect and combat it? And what is Taiwan doing? So our brains love fake news. Oh my God, it's so exciting. Can you believe that? Oh, I'm right. I knew I was right all along. I'm going to tell everybody. This is the effect that they want to create. And they know that people are attracted to those kinds of stories, and those are the kinds of things that are going to get shared. There's also confirmation bias, which is even in the face of evidence, we like to cling to our beliefs. In fact, when we're presented with facts that show that we're wrong, sometimes people will double down and say, oh, I've been raised that way all my life, I'm not going to change my mind, you're just trying to manipulate me. Technology has its own bias. It amplifies and accelerates all of these trends. You know about bots, they're not actually robots, but they are computer programs designed to spread information much faster than a human can. And that plays into the algorithms, which looks to see what are popular in the search sites or on Twitter, what's trending, and it elevates what's popular and not necessarily what's correct. We've seen bots in lots of elections, in our elections, in the French elections, in the German elections. Helped Duterte become president in the Philippines. And just this week, they found that Russian bots are fanning the flames in France with the yellow vest movements. There's also the familiarity factor. The more we hear it, the more we are likely to believe it. And that is a product of the bots as well. And then misinformation, disinformation, it plays on our social bias. Because we like to be in a community. We like to create groups. But when we create a group, it also excludes people. It can create a wall to keep other people out. But disinformation likes to play on these tensions, whether it's political or racial or religious, ethnic, or in Taiwan, the cross-straits tension. So I tell people, this is a red flag. Anytime you get a piece of information that inflames that feeling of us versus them, whether it's my football team is the best or my country is the best, beware. Because what we believe may be less about the facts or the evidence than about our loyalty to a group. You know, the fact that I think that anybody should be able to carry an automatic rifle may say less about the facts that lots of school children are unnecessarily being killed than it marks me as a member of a tribe. Not my personal belief. The other thing that they know is that we trust news from friends more than from other sources. So guess what? They want to be your friend, and they'll pretend to be your friend. So you have to ask yourself, who are they, and why are they telling you this? So this is an example from before the presidential election, when a Russian group went to Facebook and said, we want to target likely voters, supporters of Trump. And this came across a Facebook feed, and they said, press like to help Jesus beat the devil. And so if you're a conservative Christian, part of this group that they're targeting, what are you going to do? Like! And then once you press like, they know that you believe what they want you to believe. They send you a friend request, and then suddenly this information is coming into your newsfeed as if it's from your friend. It doesn't say sponsored. It's not labeled as a political ad. It's just your friend sharing their interesting information. They even use this to help start organizing demonstrations. This is one. Down with Hillary, come demonstrate in New York City. I'm going, are you? So this disinformation, you know, it seems innocuous, it's just your news feed, whatever, but it actually has very profound effects on a society that's based on a free market of information. It causes confusion, and it doesn't even have to be correct or incorrect. As long as it muddies the truth, it's very damaging, because we make our decisions based on what we assume to be reliable information. It distorts the public debate, which is essential to a democracy, and it leads people to make uninformed choices about their life, about their health, about their leaders. So Taiwan, you can see all of these elements playing out in the disinformation that affects Taiwan. But Taiwan has a few special ingredients that make it a different case from the United States. Well, like the United States, it has it's one of the world's highest users of social media. The internet penetration is almost total. Even the old people, especially the old people, elderly people, are online and using social media. They mostly use Line, which is like WhatsApp or kind of like Twitter. There's a key existential issue, this tensions, cross-state tension. Should Taiwan be independent? Should it be autonomous? Should it be separate from China? Or should everybody be part of one big motherland? There are a lot of media in Taiwan, especially digital now. And they're often influenced very much by the social media, just like you can see here too. But in Taiwan, they call it journalism. Journalists are actually rewarded for the number of clicks they get, the number of stories they post, which doesn't foster in-depth reporting, independent reporting, or thorough fact-checking. The other is China's massive scale. Maybe you've heard of the 50 Cent Army, which is an arm of the military. They're cyber troops who are supposedly paid 50 cents for every post they make, and they're rewarded if it makes it into the Taiwanese official media, or off the social media into the regular media. And they Taiwanese officials say that they fend off 2,500 cyber probes, attacks, and bits of disinformation a day that they know about. There's also a need for better media literacy. It's starting to be taught in the schools, and there are other tools that I'm going to show you. But in general, just like in the United States, media literacy is a relatively new phenomenon. Some people in Taiwan have told me also that their educational system doesn't foster critical thinking, and that there are educational reforms targeting that as well. So this is just an example of how fake news has real consequences, and it's amplified on the Kansai Airport incident that we just heard about from Jessica. So the story was that the only Chinese were being rescued from the flooded airport. And if you were Taiwanese, you had to pledge loyalty to say that you're a Chinese citizen to get on the bus. So this started in Chinese social media. It went to Chinese media. This is Chinese. It went to Taiwanese social media, and then into the regular media. And it caused so many people to attack the Taiwanese official in Japan that he ended up committing suicide, saying that he just couldn't bear the agony. Even though the story was wrong, the government tried to refute it, but the social media tidal wave of anger and attacks drove him to his death. So there's something, a small, tiny, independent fact-checking organization that just started this year, the Taiwan Fact Check Center. And so they tried to trace this back. How did this whole story start? Where did it start? How did it get so much momentum? And it was traced back to a Chinese social media user. And then it got momentum on the mainland, and then came through as I showed you, but they actually reported it out. And they called the Kansai Airport officials, and they asked, who sent the buses to rescue the passengers? Where did they get to? And the answer was very clear, and that it wasn't the way the story had been reported in the media at all. That the Taiwanese official was not at fault. But then the Kansai Airport officials asked, why are you the only one who's called? And they said that to that point, no one had really called and asked those questions. Here are some examples of fake news that I've translated that have influenced the election. This was for the presidential election a couple of years ago. There was a report on social media that Taiwan was going to lease this little island in the Spratlys, which is, as you know, contested territory, to the United States to use as a naval base. So of course it became a huge uproar between not only Taiwan and China, but the United States had to get involved in as well and refute that. I think you talked about this as well. So during the floods in Tainan, there was this picture of Tsai Ing-wen, who went, they said, oh, she didn't even get in the water, she didn't even meet the people, and look, she's laughing at this man. This was the social media post. She's laughing at this guy, like, dredging through the water. But in fact, this is the real picture. And she was
waving to this guy.
So it's just little things like this. There's just a constant stream of messages that are seeking to undermine one candidate or another, to inflame tensions. And you can't prove that they all come from the mainland. There are plenty of political opponents, just like here. It's very hyper-partisan. But you can get the idea of the climate.
So Tsai Ing-wen, in her Facebook page, actually said, someone wants to suppress Taiwan democracy. Someone wants Taiwanese to be afraid.
It was like, we have to show with our votes that these efforts will be useless. And it's pretty clear who that someone she's referring to is. To which, was it Ma Xiaoguang replied, Zhao Xinwen, it's fake news. But if everybody's saying that the news is fake, what is real? If the truth isn't truth, as Rudy Giuliani said, then what is the truth? It's very confusing. It's very subversive to democracy, to a real conversation, to even just making decisions in your daily life. So it leads to open questions, which we can talk about for the next half hour. What is the responsibility of the platforms to filter the news? Should there be more government regulation? And what about freedom of speech? How do you balance the need to protect people from misinformation and the need to protect people's freedom of expression? Every government in the world right now is grappling with this, and they're all coming up with different answers. So does anybody know who this is?
Yes. So this is Audrey Tang. She is a transgender anarchist hacktivist who's now the digital minister without portfolio in the DPP. And she's always the smartest person in the room. She's amazing. She's self-educated, dropped out of school, learned everything on the internet, went to Silicon Valley, made a lot of money, and now is in the government, committed to radical transparency. Every decision is a consensus decision. She doesn't do anything top down. I was hoping she'd be here today. Sometimes she beams in by hologram. Which is really cool, and then she shrinks it down to kid size when she's speaking at schools. Maybe here she'd be like really big. And she also espouses something which I think is a really unique strategy called troll hugging, which is she can see, she has a notification bot when people are talking about her on social media, and if they're saying things that she wants to confront, she'll pop up in the chat in a little video message and say, is there something that you'd like to discuss? And it's completely disarming and very effective because she can engage the people and actually say, why are you saying this? What are your beliefs? Why do you think that? And she says, sometimes people just want attention. They just need a hug. And so she calls it troll hugging. Anyway, she says, when SARS came to Taiwan, you couldn't negotiate with the virus. You can't stop it at the border. All you can do is educate people how not to get the virus and to inoculate them. And so her attitude is that's what Taiwan needs to do. Educate people, and that has been shown to be very effective because there are technological tools, which I'll show you, but it's always a cat and mouse game. So the best thing is to sharpen people's tools of critical thinking. And we all get fooled, but at least you can get people to ask questions. So this is what is happening now in Taiwan to deal with disinformation. Actually, tomorrow, there are amendments being considered. There are proposals to expand existing laws. But there has been a clamor by some politicians to make digital disinformation a criminal offense. And it sparked a big debate in Taiwan, but people were afraid that it would lead to a crackdown on freedom of speech. So it's a slippery slope. And so the government has decided to expand existing laws for fraud, libel, preventing social chaos, but not start anything new, not introduce any new legislation. Media literacy, we talked about, they're already started in the schools. a rapid response by government, because in the absence of good information is speculation. So the government is trying really hard to get responses to questions out same day. And the last, Audrey Tong's big thing, critical thinking and empathy, to teach people to question their information, to evaluate it critically, and also to expose themselves to different viewpoints so they can understand where people are coming from and what's a reasonable claim. Not to mention the troll hugging. That'd be great if we could all do that. So there are these different fact-checking centers that are they're popping up in Taiwan. One just started this year. It's the government real-time news clarification agency. It's a really good effort. They are committed to answering questions in the same day, so journalists can have it by deadline. But it's really hard to find. You have to go to the Executive One page and sort of go through. It's only in Chinese. And it'd be better if it were point to point, if they could find a rumor on Facebook and respond to that rumor right there where they found it on Facebook, or online, or on television. That would be more effective. There's a Taiwan Fact Check Center. They are very diligent. It's university-based, but actually run out of a small apartment by a handful of people. And then this is called gov.zero, or gov.zero, who's created this bot. And it's a good bot, as opposed to the evil bots out there. And it was started by one of the developers who was tired of responding to his grandmother, who's always posting, spreading conspiracy theories and rumors online, the Line app, to all of her friends and to all of her relatives, several times a day. And because of the hierarchy of respect in Taiwan, he couldn't keep saying, "Grandma, that's ridiculous. It's not true, don't spread it." And so he and his friends developed a bot, and he said, "Just friend the bot and send the piece of information to the bot. And the bot will say, this is true, this is not true." And they get an instant response. And like, "Grandma, just send it to the bot before you send it to your friends." And so if you friend the bot, it's called Kofacts, they're hoping to stop the spread right at the beginning. Here's another tool they developed called News Helper, and it's a browser extension. It's the same GovZero. And you can download that and put it on your browser, and it'll pop up when you encounter a story, give you a little warning that it's been disputed or that it's been proved to be a rumor. These are great ideas. They rely on volunteers right now, and so it's hard to keep up with the flow. So, you know, great in concept, could be better in execution. This is what it looks like online. You can actually go to the site and see what the latest rumors are. That's the Taiwan Fact Check Center. And this is the Executive One's real-time clarification page. But even Premier Lai is saying that the government is not doing a good enough job. And he blames fake news for skewing the elections. Jessica also touched on this. They're trying to teach people how to recognize the telltales of mainland disinformation, things like looking out for the simplified characters that aren't used in Taiwan, making it clear that it came from someplace else. But the disinformation is becoming more and more sophisticated. It looks more like native content. And now we're dealing with things like deepfakes. Has anybody seen the video of Obama, whose mouth has been manipulated to say words that he would never say? Jordan Peele did this great public service announcement. I sometimes have it, but it won't play. You should look it up on YouTube. Just Google Obama deepfake. And Jordan Peele is talking and saying, and the words are coming out of Obama's mouth. It looks pretty convincing. And, you know, he says things that Obama would never say, like, stay woke, bitches. That's really effective. But it shows what's coming. It's out there, it's not widely used, it's not completely sophisticated yet, but in 5 years, I think we're all going to be asking whether we can believe our eyes. So the big push right now is to teach people to ask questions. Who's telling me this? What's the purpose? Where does it come from? Do other sites have the story? Even little kids can ask, who says? How do you know that? It's worth teaching people to ask. And we were also talking about how to be critical without becoming cynical and not believing anything. But if you stop and consider before you share where it's coming from, why they might want you to believe that, who benefits from the spread of this information, it can go a long way to stemming the flow of this information. So this is what I tell the students. Like, these are all great tools for you, but the best tool is your brain and your finger. So before you press the button to share, maybe just put your hand in your pocket instead of your finger and think before you share.